Hi, everybody. I'm Bailey.
I'm Lacey.
And I'm Drew.
And we're sarcastic, so let's get sinister.
Sorry, did you like that panic in my face when I realized what happened?
Yeah, because I've done that before too. And it's awful.
Yeah, we haven't helped you out, I don't think. No, we do.
I like to watch whoever's turn it is flounder.
What a team player.
Yeah.
I was watching, it was one of the videos from like Tom Segura's podcast. Mm-hmm. But they were watching a video of this woman that remodels dollhouses, but after crime scenes.
Yes, I've seen that. Yes.
It was fucking awesome.
Mm-hmm.
They're so cute. And she's like, I study all the crime scene photos, and I like, it's like on a 12, like a 12th scale or something, or a 1/12th scale of what the actual like crime scene looks like and everything. It's really cute, Lacey.
Ladies.
And like a morbid, we would like it.
More cute.
Way. Yeah.
Drew, were you going
to? You guys didn't ask me about my trip.
Sorry. Oh, yeah.
Tell us about your
trip. How was your trip?
It was great.
I was looking at your pictures in awe and envy.
I strongly encourage everyone to go up there. It's just,
I'm pretty sure, Lacey, they're all photoshopped.
They looked unreal, so I'm willing to settle for that and believe you.
It's all fake news.
Jesus Christ.
She actually didn't even go on a trip.
I did. I went to Banff, Banff. In Canada. There's a lot of tourists up there, and no one knows how to drive. It pretty much isn't a real place because it's so magical.
Are you going to tell us anything about your child's imaginary friend?
Oh, your child's imaginary friend now?
Oh, Bailey. Where are you going? So, Bailey, my oldest.
Uh-huh.
Has an imaginary friend named Papa Grandma.
No, you told me about this.
There's more has happened recently.
Oh, God.
I mentioned to... So, Papa Grandma, so far, just kind of, like, reiterates to our oldest, like, well, I'll say, it's time to brush your teeth. And she'll say, Papa Grandma told me that. And I'm like, good, good. Thank you, Papa Grandma, for just having my back.
Yeah.
But I noticed, and I said to Lewis, that it's interesting that we never heard of Papa Grandma until we moved to the new house.
Oh. Yes.
He didn't think that was funny. But then later, the next thing was that we found out that Papa Grandma is missing her nose. Kind of like how a skeleton doesn't have a nose, is what I thought.
Or a person who is in a fire.
Well, hold on. We're not there yet, Lacey.
I thought I got that news first.
Oh, yes. Okay. So, at dinner, we were told that Papa Grandma was on fire.
Oh, that's horrifying.
Like, currently? Or, like, she had been?
No.
I took it to mean as you were all sitting there at dinner. Yeah.
And I said, oh, okay.
I mean, she's about that age where, like, they start seeing shit.
Yeah. But so then, what started freaking me out was that...
Did you do research in this house before you moved?
Not before, but I did try. I couldn't find... Like, there wasn't a fire here. Mm. But what freaked me out was that the other day... So, in the basement is where we have the laundry. And in the laundry room, we have a utility sink. And probably a month ago, I sent a picture to Lacey of a centipede that had crawled into the sink. And she said, don't kill it. It eats all bugs. It's like really great. So I was like, fine. I will, as long as it stays out of my way, I will leave it alone and it'll go away. It didn't go away. It was there for a month. Well, then I had to use the sink, and I was using the side because there's two different sides, and the one side drains into the other side. So as I'm using the side that doesn't have the centipede, the side that does have the centipede is slowly filling up the water, and the centipede slowly dies. So then I go upstairs, and my girls are coloring. And the oldest is coloring a picture that I've never seen her color before. I'm worried Papa Grandma ratted me out. Doesn't it look like a centipede? Like she said, hey, your mom just killed a centipede. Draw it.
This should honestly be an episode in itself.
I mean, that's the last of it, so.
Just keep giving us updates each week. We
Yeah, I
can
mean,
follow the saga.
I don't like this because I love her, but if she brings any of this shit like to me, she's going outside.
We've asked her, like, who is Papa Grandma? Like, there's
No. She's sworn to secrecy. Have you never seen those movies, like The Conjuring or anything? She's sworn to secrecy. She can't talk about it. Papa Grandma told her not to.
I mean, she told us that Papa Grandma's on fire and has no nose, so.
Papa Grandma was distracted during those moments.
So that's what's going on.
Nice.
Like, you know what? I want to
No.
visit your house.
I was gonna say Bailey's not happy about it.
No. It's also it's we're recording later than usual. Like, I don't like this. It's giving weird vibes.
Sorry.
Yeah, whatever. Do you remember when like what was it last like October or something when I was doing like the haunted like episode of like all the different like that like the doll and stuff and you guys were all getting freaked out? Yeah, this is worse.
Well, this is more close to home for me.
Yeah. Legit,
But
it's in your home.
I will say that Papa Grandma seems to pose no threat. She hasn't attacked anybody yet, so
Early
that's good.
days.
Right now, she just kind of seems like a little guardian angel.
Keep us updated.
Sure will. Would you guys like to know, like why I brought you guys here today?
Yes, please.
No.
Okay, so I'm going to tell you about Deanna Wild. And just a disclaimer, let me finish chewing my popcorn. Oh, almost fell out of my chair. Okay. Just a disclaimer, this case was featured on an episode of Forensic Files. During the episode, they changed the victim's name to Donna Hartman. I don't know why, but that's what they did.
Weird.
They kept the murderers' names the same, but they changed the victim's name. And then also, like, I'll show you pictures, but they have like they recreated the pictures of like the crime scene. And now if you like Google Deanna Wild, you have to try and figure out which one's real and which one's the recreation. Okay.
Okay.
So if I were to ask you guys where trials are held, what would you say?
You said trials?
Court.
Like witch trials or like court trials?
The court trials.
A courthouse?
Well, not always.
Oh boy.
In the late 1980s, a trial was held on the edge of a cliff overlooking the Pacific Ocean.
Oh.
This was the first time in American judicial history that a trial was held in this type of setting. The trial lasted 3 days in Big Sur, California. The scenery was beautiful, an area frequented by sightseers interested in enjoying the windswept cliffs, sparkling ocean water, and spectacular coastlines. Unfortunately, though, people aren't always as cautious as they should be on these cliffs. Mm-hmm. It's not uncommon for someone to fall and either be seriously injured or killed. Isn't it just lovely?
Mm-hmm.
On April 2nd, 1987, three tourists from San Diego were walking along the cliffside overlook known as Seal Beach. Are you curious as to why it's called Seal Beach?
Are there seals?
Because there's seals.
Oh my gosh, there's so many seals.
The group consisted of a married couple in their late 40s, early 50s, and their friend, a 20-year-old girl. They had been enjoying the scenery and taking photographs. The group had just had lunch together before going on this little hike. As the couple began walking towards their car in the parking area, their friend stayed behind to admire the view. Which, can you blame her? Look at all the seals.
Honestly, I'd probably hang out with the seals.
This is the trail map. So, I want to tell you about Deanna Jalen Wild. She was born March 8, 1967 in Louisville, Kentucky. Deanna was the daughter of Roberta Joe Roberts and Larry Dean Hubbard. Bobby Joe is how she preferred to be called, other than Roberta. Bobby Joe was a teacher, and Deanna had a sister named Jane. Not much else is known, really, about her familial life. In 1970, Deanna's parents divorced, and Bobby Joe remarried a law student named Mr. Marshall. No first name. He just goes by Mr. Marshall.
Hmm.
Although that marriage eventually ended in divorce as well. When Deanna was in school, it was determined that her IQ was 85, which is barely average. And I found this lovely little thing for you guys. Because I remember
talking about
we recently discussed IQs and like what is good. There you go. So Deanna, her IQ was 85, so as you can see, that's at the very end of average. At 17, she fell in love with a Navy man named Jay Wild. 2 years later, they married and moved to San Diego, where he was stationed. But his absences while at sea strained the marriage, and they separated in 1987. Deanna was 20 years old at this time. Friends and family described Deanna as nice and kind, as well as being almost phobia-level terrified of heights. Her best friends said she was fun to be with and part of a lively social circle. She was wonderful, friendly, and thoughtful. So following the separation, instead of going home, Deanna stayed in California and ended up meeting and befriending Virginia and Billy Joe McGinnis. Together, the friends traveled and enjoyed the California scenery. Virginia was born in early January 1937 in New York to a dairy farmer named Christy Hoffman and his wife Mary. She had an older brother named Thomas who worked on the farm with his father. Virginia's mother worked at Riggs Hospital in laundry. The family lived in poverty, and Virginia suffered sexual abuse. I don't know any details, but that's just what it said. And according to the article, in childhood, she exhibited the three conditions of the MacDonald triad. Are you familiar?
No.
So the MacDonald triad posits that animal cruelty, fire setting, and bedwetting in childhood is indicative of later aggression and violent behavior in adults.
Oh,
researchers, Research. Let me finish the paragraph.
Fine.
Researchers refer to this phenomenon as a precursor to later antisocial behaviors, including serial and sexual murder. This, the triad, is just a theory. What were you going to say?
I was going to say, isn't that the psychopathic triad or something?
I don't know. It's a McDonald triad.
All right.
I like when you guys have stuff to say so that I can eat some more popcorn.
Ooh. We're not saying anything right now.
Virginia had been married to Richard, aka Dick Coates, in 1954. Then she married Sylvester Graham Reardon in 1971, before finally marrying Billy Joe McGinnis, April 14th, 1984, in Carson City, Nevada. Billy Joe was born in June 1939. He was the youngest of six kids to Carrie L. and Minnie McGinnis. Yeah, Minnie. Right? Say Minnie McGinnis.
Minnie McGinnis.
Right?
Minnie McGinnis. Minnie McGinnis.
Perfect. And then his dad's name is C-A-R-I-E-L.
Carriel. Yeah, I feel like you said it. That's how I would have said it.
I know, but like, have you ever heard of that name?
No.
Yeah. That's why I spelled it for you. The family was from Oklahoma, but moved to California before BJ was born. Billy Joe preferred to be called BJ. So, like Deanna.
It's not a good nickname.
No. But to be fair, neither is Dick. Or Dick Coates. That sounds weird, right? Dick Coates?
Mm-hmm.
Sounds very uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Or cute.
What?
A Dick Coat.
Mm.
Just gonna move on.
Yeah.
Off the prototype.
We're just gonna breeze right past that. So, like Deanna, Virginia and BJ were from the Midwest, which is probably why Deanna befriended them so quickly. Following her separation, Deanna moved in with them in their Chula Vista apartment in California while she was looking for a job and her own apartment. But once Deanna moved in and Virginia and BJ, they began trying to isolate her. When Deanna's mother, Bobby Joe, would call to check up on her, Virginia would reportedly prevent that. Bobby Joe bought and sent Deanna a plane ticket to come visit her home in Kentucky. During the visit, Bobby Joe and Deanna argued. I imagine it was probably about her relationship with the McGinnises. Like, hey, why is that old middle-aged couple keeping you from me? Deanna left Kentucky and returned to the McGinnis' home. So that's some background. Let's go back to April 2nd. Okay, Lacey just sent a picture of Dick Coates.
That is adorable.
It sounds like
it's a winter willy warmer.
That's a better name for it.
Oh. I like this.
Yes.
You know that the male their body will do that for them. It'll keep the testicles warm.
But this is a cute way.
What man would want to knit it? You know what? I'm going to ask Pat this tonight later.
I'm not going to ask. I'm going to get one and be like, surprise.
Should we all surprise our men for Christmas?
With willy warmers?
Oh my god, what if they wear them all together?
Maybe. We'll do some research.
Where's Etsy?
Okay, so back to April 2nd. Back to April 2nd. The way it makes sense to me, Deanna didn't say anything to BJ or Virginia. She just stopped walking with them to enjoy the scenery a bit longer. Like, you know, you're walking in a group and one just kind of hangs back.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I imagine that BJ and Virginia sensed that she was no longer behind them. So they both turned around to check for her. But Deanna was gone. They rushed to where they had last seen her, on the cliff's edge. Horrified, they discovered Deanna at the bottom of the cliff, 500 feet below.
Mm.
They ran for help, going to a nearby store called the Coast Gallery. Currently, the Coast Gallery is permanently closed, but it was a unique fine arts venue in a converted water tank with a rooftop cafe serving espresso and sandwiches.
Okay. It's a lot. There's a lot happening in that description.
Yeah, my thought was, it sounds like something that you'd find in California.
It does.
So, rescuers arrived, but had little hope. Mm. It was highly unlikely that she would have survived a 500-foot fall. The workers made their way down the cliff to Deanna and confirmed that she had died. Hold on a sec.
I see them.
Casey, did you see what I sent?
Yep, they just came through. I didn't know there were going to be varieties. I'm going to get on Etsy.
Oh, so they're not from the same person? But, yeah. It's, yeah. Oh, they have an eggplant one.
What?
Hold on, let me just show you these.
There's a shop called Willy Warmer Shop. Hey, buddy.
Someone's awake. Drew, before you continue, look at what I sent.
Oh my god, I found a crocodile one.
I know, I saw the pig one, and I was like, oh my god, Drew!
Minions.
They have a reindeer one.
I found a crocodile.
Anyway, ready to go back?
Yes.
The McGinnises told the responding officer, Officer Jess Mason, that Deanna was wearing high heels, which likely caused her to lose her footing at the edge of the cliff, causing her fall. So, I don't know about you guys, but I personally love hiking in high heels. I feel like it helps with your calf muscles.
I like how unsteady my ankles feel when I walk in heels. Mm-hmm. I like knowing I couldn't run if I needed to.
Mm-hmm.
For what are you running from on a hike?
Bears.
No, you don't run from bears. You walk slowly away from them.
I know what you should do when encountering a bear, and I can tell you what I would do when encountering a bear. Those two things are not the same.
I know, I don't have a follow-up.
You know what grinds my gears? Girls that will wear, like, Lacey, because you've been to a bunch of national parks, too. But girls that, like, dress up and, like, dresses and everything just to get, like, cute photos for, like, a lookout or something.
Yeah.
Because people actually do that.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the people that think that high heels are comfortable in an airport.
Oh, I'm super comfort mode in the airport.
Same. I want shoes I can slip on and off. Especially through security. I don't want to walk barefoot through that.
I saw this thing. It was a TikTok. Somebody was complaining. And they're like, people used to dress nice to travel and wear suits and blah, blah. And I was like, well, we stopped because that was stupid. Like, if you're traveling to go on a business trip, okay. But if you're going to be in a plane for hours. We also used to smoke on
aircraft.
Yeah, like, while pregnant.
Well, that's how you stay thin, Lacey.
There are so many things we used to do.
Anyway, but yeah, so I could see her wearing heels on a hike. Mm-hmm. How long was the hike?
I don't know.
Well, it's like a quick mile. Like, yeah.
We'll go back in, does that say?
Anyway.
Oh, I can zoom.
Do you want to zoom?
It looks like if they went all the way to the end, it's 1.9.
Miles?
I don't know.
So, I feel like they hiked to the cafe or like a lunch spot and then hiked back because they were walking back towards their parking spot and it's not a loop.
Yeah.
Anyway, the McGinnises told the police that they hadn't heard Deanna yell or scream for help. Later, Officer Mason described the couple as calm, but he didn't find them suspicious. He also noted that they appeared appropriately distraught after finding out that Deanna was dead. The McGinnises provided photographs taken earlier in the day to police, and the photos did show Deanna wearing high heels.
What's appropriately distraught?
Okay. I could understand if they were like, hey, let's go to this cafe. Like, maybe they met up to go to this cafe or whatever and weren't really thinking about, like, the hiking to it aspect, and she was just, like, dressed nice.
Mm-hmm. So, that one photo at the top there, where mm-hmm. she's, like, up against a wall.
Rock.
There, you can see in this, like, the photo that I had in the slideshow was cut off, but you can see
she's on the edge
heels.
Of the cliff. Oh.
So
I thought that that was the wife. How old was this girl when she died?
20.
Oh, she looks significantly older in that picture. I thought that was the wife of the couple.
It's the 80s. Yeah. Everyone looked old.
Yeah, I was going to say. That's hard to judge, but. So, a routine autopsy was performed, but because the initial theory was it was an accident, it was not a forensic autopsy. This means that they determined the cause of death, but didn't look for, like, DNA under the nails or toxins in her bloodstream or any other forensics. So the cause of death was a basal skull fracture. A basilar skull fracture is usually caused by a substantial blunt force trauma involving at least one of the bones at the base of the skull. So, like,
okay.
Base. Later, the prosecutor, Louis Aragon, would say, quote, I would characterize the autopsy as meeting minimal professional standards. And I thought that was a bit of an epic burn. Deanna's family was less than satisfied with the investigation, or lack thereof, into Deanna's demise. After Deanna's funeral, her mother, Bobby, tried collecting a $2,500 burial insurance policy, but was having trouble doing so because the insurance company was doing some fact-finding. Bobby reached out to a member of her church, an attorney named Steve Keeney, for help. So Keeney comes in and is annoyed right away. Law enforcement never really investigated the case and treated it like an accident from the get-go. In addition to the autopsy being just like a basic autopsy, no photographs were taken at the scene. So Keeney looked at the photographs that the McGinnises provided. The photos taken from the start of the day depict a happy and alert Deanna. But photos taken later in the day, Deanna appears docile and exhausted. Her eyes look droopy, and investigators in Keeney thought she looked intoxicated or stoned. The last photo taken of Deanna was troubling to investigators. It's this one that I'm currently sharing with you. This is actually from the Forensic Files recreation, but they did a really good job recreating the photos. It depicted BJ and Deanna at the cliff's edge. Deanna was looking at the ocean while BJ was looking over his shoulder as if to see if the coast was clear. His hand once was on Deanna's shoulder.
He's so upset with what's about to happen.
His hand was on Deanna's shoulder, and he looked very suspicious. What do you guys think about the photo?
I think with the suspicions that we already have, it's suspicious, but I also don't think it's suspicious, like, in and of itself.
Yeah. What suspicions do you already have?
Well, it feels like we're leading up to being suspicious of these people throwing Deanna off a cliff. That's just how it feels like I'm being led.
I think it looks pretty suspicious. I don't like the way where his hands are.
It literally looks like he's about to just shove her.
Yeah. And he's
I think it just looks like he
him.
Has his, like, arm around her.
No.
I don't like the way his, like, leg is up, like, the one leg.
Yeah, like, he's getting, what is it, like, momentum or something, or
like he's got like a Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it would be a little
Lacey.
wild if they were planning on throwing her off a cliff and his wife was like, "Let me take a picture of you as you do it."
Maybe she didn't mean to.
That's true.
Or maybe they want a memory of it. Like a trophy.
You.
It's interesting Bailey brings that up because
Ooh.
this does become something investigators wonder later. And that is their theory that it's a trophy. I have a different theory, but we'll get there when we get there. So the final four photos taken were unusual as well. They were landscape photos. Investigators believe those photos to be surveillance photos and that Virginia was looking around to see if there was any witnesses. There's a shot. Here, I'll pull it up. There, these are the final four photos.
Okay.
There's a shot looking down the cliff where Deanna fell. Then three panoramic views, one to the left, one to the right, and one behind them. They didn't seem like photos a tourist would take. Like one of them was of the road.
Yeah.
The only one that would look like a tourist to take it is that like top left one.
Yeah.
But the rest are just like you're not focusing on anything, like
It's just weird.
yeah.
So investigators started to consider the possibility that BJ McGinnis had pushed Deanna shortly after that photo was taken. But what was the motive? What do you guys think?
Mada.
Okay, yeah, what would the motive be though? Just murder?
Yeah.
Okay. Lacey, any theories?
Don't know. You said that the wife had been getting like really controlling over her, like seeing her mom and stuff, right? That doesn't help me with anything.
Oh, okay.
Money.
Mean, they could have been having some kind of a weird throuple thing going on and
No, Lacey, you're wrong. Bailey said money. Interesting.
Oh.
Investigators initially asked the couple if they knew about any life insurance Deanna may have had.
Oh
They
no.
said they did not know of any, but investigators soon discovered that one day prior to Deanna's death, the McGinnises had taken out a $35,000 insurance policy on her.
The day before.
They
April
couldn't have
1st,
planned it a little bit
they
longer, like.
took the policy out. When the police spoke to the insurance agent, he recalled that Virginia McGinnis had asked him a question he found to be very odd.
Don't know.
Like what? How soon does this start?
What happens if it's
As they
murder?
were, no. As they were leaving the office, Virginia turned towards the agent and said, quote, "This is applicable to an accidental death, isn't it?"
How stupid. We've talked about this before, people who do this shit and then like immediately kill the person. You couldn't wait. Like, I mean, even a couple months would be suspicious, but not as suspicious as 24 hours.
No. Lacey, they knew this hike was dangerous. That's why they got it out.
But
They
Lacey,
wanted to look out for themselves when they took their friend on a hike.
neither, guys, settle down. Because neither Virginia nor BJ McGinnis were listed as the beneficiary of the insurance policy. Who
Who
was?
was?
Someone by the name of James Coates.
Didn't we hear about a Dick Cope before? Because that
We
took us down
do.
a path. Who was Dick Cope? I don't remember.
Dick Coates is Virginia's first husband. Who do you think
Is
James
he
Coates is?
his
Is he her
brother?
son?
James Coates is Virginia Guinness's son. He was in prison at the time of Deanna's death. So you're probably wondering how he ended up being a beneficiary on the insurance policy.
I am wondering
His
that. I
mother.
am.
Because, like, for example, Lacey can't just take an insurance policy out to be the beneficiary if Bailey dies, because you guys aren't related.
And also, you won't be getting any of my life insurance, Lacey.
You need to come closer to your mic, babe.
You won't be getting any of my life insurance.
Right.
Till I take out a policy.
On the insurance policy, James Coates was listed as being Deanna's fiance, even though both he and Deanna were still technically married to other people at the time. When eventually confronted with the fact that both Deanna and James were already married, the McGinnises maintained that they were engaged, and therefore it was not abnormal for them to have an insurance policy on their future daughter-in-law. Now, I know we all have in-laws, but do your in-laws have insurance policies on you?
I hope not.
Not to my knowledge. I feel like I should start asking questions.
Just double check. Because I wanted to make sure that I wasn't the weird one.
I also don't have an insurance policy on any of them. So, you know.
That sounds suspicious, Lacey.
Maybe I should.
Even more suspicious, the McGinnises filed a claim to collect the insurance money on, when do you think?
The week after.
April 3rd.
The day after. Oh. They like doing things boom, 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 one day at a time.
So to recap, Wednesday, they take out an insurance policy on Deanna, confirming accidental death supply. Thursday, Deanna accidentally dies. And Friday, they filed to collect the money. When they showed up to collect the money, the insurance agent was like, what the shit? She's already dead?
She was really sick.
So now they're thinking homicide for sure, because the autopsy was so basic, they had to get a little creative with getting some clues. First, they found out that the doctor who performed the autopsy had done something a bit unorthodox, which I don't love the sound of initially. The doctor was not a forensic pathologist, and no one seems to know why, but he kept a vial of Deanna's blood in refrigerated storage.
Oh, interesting. A little creepy, helpful, I'm going to guess.
2 years after Deanna's death, the vial was sent to the forensics lab.
2 years.
At the lab, they tested her blood for toxins and found traces of amitriptyline.
What?
Amitriptyline.
Oh, it's a
sounded better.
I think
it's an antidepressant, commonly known as Elavil. Catherine Ham, a forensic toxicologist, reported that if someone who had never taken the drug before took just one pill, they would feel drowsy, dizzy, and possibly disoriented. So, I know you guys are thinking, did Deanna have a prescription for Elavil?
I was thinking that.
The answer is no.
Oh.
But, guess who did?
One of the couple.
I lost
her. BJ McGinnis. Remember how they went out to lunch? The waiter said that Deanna had ordered a soda. They had no way to prove it, but the theory was that someone had spiked her soda with Elavil. Photos from the autopsy were sent to and analyzed by forensic pathologist Dr. Barbara Weekly Jones. Dr. Barb noted two oddities in the photographs. Deanna had wounds on the back of her hands, but not on her palms, and her fingernails were broken. These two things together were what was odd. If Deanna had fallen and was grabbing onto rocks as she fell, that would explain her broken nails. But then you'd also expect to see abrasions on her palms. Dr. Barb's theory is that Deanna was pushed over the side of the cliff, but she managed to grab onto the edge. So the attacker stomped on her hands or smashed at them with a rock or something to make her let go, causing the injuries to the back of her hands as well as broken nails.
Ouch.
So investigators began looking more into the McGinnis' background. Police found that Virginia McGinnis had received many payouts from various insurance companies for other deaths and several suspicious accidents.
Interesting.
Before she was 30, she'd collected on at least five claims associated with fires in buildings in which she lived. Her house has just kept getting burnt down. Here's a
Jesus,
picture of
there
a
should be like
poem.
a database of when people
Database.
collect insurance money, whether it's like house insurance, or it should be one database, life insurance should be another one, so that like when somebody collects, it'll throw up a flag if it's more than a certain number of times, and they're like, wait a minute, this
Why is
person
she
already
collecting
got
so much?
six life insurance policies handed to her.
So, in addition to the buildings catching on fire, relatives and loved ones had died in her care, including her second husband, her daughter, and her mother. She falsely claimed to be a nurse, which is how these people ended up in her care. So, Virginia's second husband, Sylvester, aka Bud Reardon, had been admitted to a hospital for cancer treatment in the fall of 1974. Virginia was able to convince the physicians that she was a nurse, fully qualified to inject various medications. I
Did she
saw a
just tell
reported.
them and they believed her?
Probably. I saw it reported that on September 8th, Virginia gave her children money for a night out on the town. And they returned to find Bud dead. But so, as far as I could find, Virginia's children were named Cynthia and James, but Cynthia had died in 1972, so I'm not sure which children she sent away. But she reportedly cleaned Bud's body, waived an autopsy, and collected the insurance money with cancer listed as the cause of death. A similar situation occurred with her mother, Mary Agnes Hoffman, who in 1986 died of a heart attack while in Virginia's care. Now, this is going to be a little sad for a second.
Oh, good.
Cynthia Elaine Coates was born February 19th, 1969, to Dick Coates and Virginia McGinnis. At the time, she was not McGinnis. Although, yeah, that's what I was just saying. In December of 1972, Virginia allegedly found her 3-year-old daughter, Cynthia, dead in a barn. 3-year-old daughter, three. Deputy Coroner Henry Burchett pronounced Cynthia dead at 3:10 p.m. at a local hospital. I'm just going to read directly from this newspaper article. It's short. Burchett said the girl, her mother, Mrs. Virginia Reardon, and the child's grandfather were trying to run a horse into a barn yesterday when the girl became cold and went into the barn. The coroner said that when her grandfather and mother went into the barn, they found the child hanging from a rafter with baling twine around her neck. Burchett said he could not determine how the accident occurred.
That is suspicious.
She was found hanging.
Bailey, why are you so quiet?
She was found hanging.
Still very quiet.
Yeah.
Did she have life insurance on her daughter?
This
Or am
is
I getting
better.
ahead of things?
Yes, much better.
Sorry, my mic went down.
Virginia received money for all of these deaths and all of the fires. So insurance companies never questioned the settlements because the face amount of the policies were so low.
Okay.
Every single one was for $35,000. It was concluded that this is how Virginia made money. She didn't have a job, she just received insurance payouts.
Well, that's
She just killed people off.
Yes, of course.
fires.
Police got a hold of the insurance policy for Deanna and found that every piece of the policy was forged or fake, except for Deanna's name. One forgery, for example, was the signature of the witness, Alice Kassane. Alice lived next door to the McGinnises, but she denied signing the forms. Alice noticed that whoever did sign the documents misspelled her name. Her signature is the one on the top there. So instead of writing Kessane, they wrote Sain. I feel like you should know how to spell your own name.
Most people.
Sometimes.
Ooh.
Bless you. Bless you.
Gesundheit.
Me As if they
German.
needed more evidence that Alice didn't sign the forms, the misspelled signature didn't look anything like her own signature. So they were like, yeah, we understand that it's misspelled, but also like it doesn't match your signature.
I had a
Just
student
say
once
in
who forged
case.
his dad's signature and he spelled his dad's name wrong. That was
Oh,
cute.
that's embarrassing.
Yeah.
So police forced Virginia McGinnis to write Alice's name in cursive and compared it to the signature on the forged insurance documents. Which I like. Why wouldn't you just disguise your handwriting again? I don't understand. But.
Because, but like, so maybe that they, like, I'm assuming that they don't tell her, like, hey, we need you to write this out so we can compare it to blah, blah, blah.
But like, okay, so you're at the police station now, like, we want you to write in cursive your neighbor's name. And you'd be like, oh, this is normal.
Well, criminals are idiots.
That's true. Okay, so Alice's real signature is the one in the middle.
Right.
The one on the top is from the insurance document, and the one on the bottom is what Virginia did at the police station.
Well, two of those certainly look the same, spelling and everything.
Yeah.
Especially that N is very, the N and the E is very damning.
So, BJ and Virginia McGinnis were arrested.
Oh, I'm shocked to hear
What?
it. On what grounds?
They were charged with the murder of Deanna Wilde on September 15th, 1989. Bail was either withheld or set at $5 million. I saw it both ways. At the time of her arrest, Virginia claimed she wasn't even there at the time of Deanna's accident. She pointed out that she wasn't even in any of the photos.
Who took the photos then?
At this point, police were like, oh shit, Jenny, you got us there. Just kidding. That's not what they said. What they said instead was, hey, dummy, in one of the photos, there's a shadow. It's clearly visible. Oh, hold on. I have a picture for you guys.
Us.
That's them in court. So this.
That's them in court, and I thought that that person that was like behind the window, that
Was the
was the
shadow?
shadow. I was like, this is a weird picture from the height.
No, so this is the recreation for Forensic Files, but you can see that little shadow in the corner. Using
Pythagorean.
theorem,
Oh.
which is a squared plus b squared equals c squared, investigators determined that the photographer was 5'6". Which is exactly how tall Virginia is.
I'm gonna share that with the math teachers.
What?
I think they know what the Pythagorean
No,
theorem is.
no,
I would
that
hope that
for
they do.
them when the next time a kid's like, when will we need this? I'm giving them another example to solve a
Solving murder?
murder.
Okay. Okay, so investigators did wonder why she took a picture of her husband just as he was about to push Deanna over the edge. So this is where.
That conversation.
Where Bailey kind of got ahead of things. They theorized that it was like a trophy that she could look back at and feel excited about. However, knowing Virginia's history, she's had three husbands, she's killed one of them, she's killed her own daughter and her own mother. She hasn't been punished yet. So I kind of wonder if she took the photo as a way to put the blame on her husband if they were to get caught.
Interesting.
Where she could be like, I didn't know he was going to push her, but look, he clearly did.
But you signed, I mean, I'm not saying that she's smart, but she forged her neighbor's name on the document.
Well, the other thing is that she hasn't gotten caught. So she's still going to do everything the same way. But just in case she does get caught,
She isn't out.
Do you think that she told her husband about the other people that she killed and was like, this will work because I've done it before? And if so, how dumb was he to align himself with this woman who has no problem killing the people around her?
If she told him everything, it seems more like I kind of got the vibe that she was just like, let's do this for
we
money.
Can do this. Mm-hmm. And he was like, okay, babe.
Although at the same time, he didn't have a job either. So
they're just
money's gotta come from somewhere. So investigators believe that Virginia only befriended Deanna because she seemed like the perfect victim, which I agree. Virginia's trial began on January 6, 1992. So earlier when I said in the early, not the late 90s, the trial was held. Just kidding. Early 90s. The prosecution used a lot of character witnesses to show the jury that Deanna was just a kind young woman who was targeted and victimized by the McGinnises. Virginia's lawyer, Albert Tamayo, blamed Deanna's fall on her poor choice of footwear, while Virginia claimed that Deanna was addicted to drugs.
Feels rude. Cast aspersions on somebody after you kill them.
Yeah. The jury was taken to the cliff where Deanna died for 3 days. This was the longest time a court had been in session at a suspected crime scene in American history. Closing arguments were heard back in the San Diego courtroom on February 28, 1992. Jurors deliberated for 4 days and returned a verdict of guilty of first-degree murder, as well as forgery and insurance fraud. Virginia McGinnis was 55 years old when she was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole.
Nice.
Later, on June 25th, 2011, Virginia died in prison. She was 74.
Good.
Are you wondering what happened to her hubby?
Sure.
Yes.
BJ McGinnis died while in prison awaiting trial at age 52 due to HIV-related complications.
Oh.
Ew, he had HIV.
Wasn't prepared for that.
Sorry. But so he died in prison, never got to be tried in court.
Annoying.
But
there's some justice. I mean
they both died. So.
Yeah.
It's not like he ran
in jail.
Yeah. That's true. That's a good point, Liz. Any final thoughts?
Well, I can't quite believe she got away with what she was doing for so long.
Well, her husband and her mother, they were already sick, and she kind of just like helped them over the edge, and then blamed it on their illnesses.
Yeah.
So that's how I think she got away with that.
Yeah, this one definitely felt like the riskiest.
Yeah.
I wonder why. I wonder if maybe they were running out of money, and she was like, "We have to do it soon. We don't have time."
Mm-hmm.
Well, also, she's such a young girl. Like, they have to make it some kind of accident.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, she didn't know any sick people.
Yeah.
Well, that was sinister.
And we were sarcastic.
And we hope you keep listening.